Get ready to rumble. Shilling Show Unleashed on the Seven Thunders Media Network. Former city councilor, husband, father, and community watchdog. Your host, Rob Shilling.
Welcome to the Shilling Show Unleashed podcast. Remember, your direct support makes our show possible, and you can directly support this podcast by visiting shillingshow.com and then clicking on the Patreon banner at the top of the page to make a monthly contribution. We appreciate your support. Shilling Show Unleashed podcast welcomes Daniel J. Mitchell, PhD, co-founder, Center for Freedom and Prosperity, a national tax reform expert, a former senior fellow at the Cato Institute and the Heritage Foundation. And today's topic, Javier Milei, Argentina and Lessons for America. And Dan Mitchell, welcome to the Shilling Show Unleashed podcast.
I'm glad to be with you.
We should start with a brief history of Argentina's rise and fall from prosperity. So how did this country become prosperous and to what extent?
During the 1800s and early 1900s, Argentina benefited from the fact that it had a good arable land and had lots of natural resources. But perhaps most importantly, it benefited from the fact that it had a classical liberal constitution. It had government policies that were, by and large, relatively laissez-faire. It was a free market economy. And during that period of the 1800s and early 1900s, Argentina climbed up the world rankings. And by the time you got to the early part of the 20th century, all the way until, frankly, the end of World War II, Argentina oftentimes was in the top 10 among the world's richest nations. So they had a period of time where they were very prosperous because of free market policies. Unfortunately, what happened is it really went downhill with Perón, who took over after World War II. But some of the bad policies even go back to the 1920s. But it was really Peronism that threw Argentina for a loop. And so all the prosperity they built up, becoming the world's richest country, it turns out, just like we see everywhere in the world, that when you adopt bad policy, you get bad results. And Argentina has had a continuous slide where it has fallen in the world competitiveness rankings. It's fallen in terms of its ranking, in terms of per capita GDP. Every possible measure you could look at, you can see that statism, big government, government intervention, financing budgets by printing money. I mean, there's all sorts of bad policies that have contributed to a very dismal situation in Argentina, such that if you now look at some of the measures from Economic Freedom of the World or Index of Economic Freedom, Argentina now ranks among the worst countries in the world for economic liberty. That's the scenario that led Argentinian voters to, in effect, do something really unexpected and really radical. They elected a libertarian president.
Yeah, it's pretty remarkable. You mentioned the 1920s, and it kind of set off a little bell in my head about what was going on here in the 20s and the teens with the progressive movement. Was this a worldwide influence? In other words, were they subject to the same influences that things were going on in the United States at the time?
I'm not an expert on the political sociology of what happened in Argentina, whether it was exactly similar or analogous to what happened in the United States. All we know for sure is that there all of a sudden was the development of bad public policy. I do think it probably was a worldwide phenomenon. You had populations, industrialization led to populations of voters who saw themselves as workers versus capitalists. So there are probably sort of common factors that led to the rise of the progressive era and left-wing policies in countries all around the world. But I'm not going to pretend that I'm an expert on how it happened specifically in Argentina, just that it did happen.
Dan, let's talk about Javier Milei, and what do we know about his upbringing and education?
President Milei of Argentina is a genuine libertarian, genuine hardcore believer in individual liberty and freedom. He's an economist by training, a well-regarded one at that. What really sort of vaulted him to popularity and then ultimately political success is that he was a frequent commentator on TV and elsewhere. He would give speeches, and he was, of course, very colorful in the way that he would describe the problems of Argentina. He explained that, yes, these are problems, but he pointed out that government was causing the problems. So the normal Peronist cycle was government would do something, it would create problems. The Peronists would then say, oh, we have this problem, we need even more government to solve the problems caused by previous government. Of course, they never admitted the problems were caused by previous government, but you had sort of this lather, rinse, repeat cycle of big government causing the economy to suffer, and then politicians saying, oh, they're suffering, so we need even more government. And what Milei did, using very sound, rigorous economic analysis mixed in with his colorful, dynamic personality, is he went to the Argentinian people and said, look, we've been making a mistake. We've been voting for bad politicians who are doing bad policies. And if we want to rescue our country and sort of recapture the glory of Argentina's economic past, we need a radical revision. I mean, he campaigned with a chainsaw, saying he was going to take a chainsaw to government. There's a famous clip of him going through all the different government departments and bureau and saying, we're getting rid of this, we're getting rid of that, we're getting rid of all these wasteful bureaucracies. Now, that's remarkable. I mean, that's more Reagan than Reagan was in a country that was explicitly big government, pro-intervention, pro-statism. So I guess it shows that when voters have no choice, maybe sometimes they wake up and realize we need to reverse our path.
You mentioned, Dan, his colorful approach to things. And yet what I saw, and this is probably indicative of the state of our own media, was this guy was portrayed as a nut, as a whack job going into it. So where does the truth lie about him? Is he just colorful or is he beyond that?
I think that he is very substantive. I don't know him, but I've talked to people who do know him, well-regarded classical liberals and small government conservatives and libertarians in Latin America. And they all say the same thing, that he's a very serious, thoughtful guy, that he actually understands economics. He understands all these issues. But what he did was that he mixed that substance with personality. And I guess, you know, I'm a policy wonk. I suppose if I had better personality, I would do a better job promoting individual liberty and economic freedom in the United States. So I envy him for what he's done. But it's just astounding. Imagine a hardcore libertarian getting elected to be governor of some left-wing state like Illinois or something like that in the United States. This is what he has done. He has completely overturned the political consensus in terms of, you know, can a small government candidate win in what is considered very, very hostile territory.
I'm glad you brought up the analogy because I'm thinking back to a guest I had in studio some years ago, Governor Gary Johnson. Was that a similar situation and did he affect the same sort of change in his home state?
Gary Johnson has had the same problem that Milei faces today. Just because you're elected doesn't necessarily mean you can get everything you want if the legislature is not friendly, shall we say, to your agenda. So Gary Johnson did achieve some things. And when he ran for president as a libertarian in 2016, I mean, he made those arguments and he got more votes certainly than any libertarian ever has received. But it's not like he turned New Mexico into a free market paradise. I mean, people, when they talk about limited government, they're still talking about states like New Hampshire and Florida and, you know, Tennessee and South Dakota. New Mexico is never on the list. So he achieved some things, but you wouldn't call it a great turnaround for the state of New Mexico simply because he had a hostile legislature. We do face that same issue in Argentina. Milei's party only controls, I mean, even if you include some third parties and things like that, definitely nowhere close to a governing majority in the legislature. And so if he's going to get through some of his bolder proposals, he's frankly going to need support from some of the Peronists. You know, the Peronists still control the Argentina's parliament. And yeah, there are some of them that sort of realize we went too far and maybe we need to retrench a little bit. But are they going to support everything that Milei wants? Of course not. So it's really going to be an interesting question whether Milei actually can sort of force through probably by sort of going to the people and telling them you need to put pressure on the politicians. I'm very nervous about whether or not he can get the changes through that are needed for his country.
You talk about going to the people, and it's one of the concerns I have about America, but let's talk about the people in Argentina. After generations of being controlled and essentially probably brainwashed, as many of our citizens are here, are they even receptive or able to receive this information in a knowledgeable way?
That's a great question. They certainly were able to receive the information in a way that led them to vote by, what, a 56 to 44, basically landslide margin to put Milei in the president's office in Argentina. You could probably interpret that vote as in part being for libertarian ideas, but also in part just a referendum on the fact that there was hyperinflation and economic stagnation. I mean, all the bad results that Peronism gave the Argentinian economy, people in Argentina were fed up and tired of it. And they figure, okay, we're going to roll the dice. You know, here's this guy saying something completely different. He's definitely, you know, not a typical politician. You mentioned earlier, some media people in the U.S. said, oh, Milei is the Argentinian Trump. Well, of course, that's not true. Trump isn't a libertarian. He doesn't believe in small government. He's a protectionist. And Milei is different in all those categories. But where they're same is that I think voters see them both as authentic. Unlike a normal politician who is smooth and has all these poll-tested lines and phrases that are run through focus groups. I mean, the normal politician is just a total phony. Every so often you have politicians like Trump. You know, Trump is Trump. Whether you like him or don't like him, at least he's authentic. Well, in a completely different way, Milei is authentic. He wasn't, you know, changing what he believed in when he ran for office. He was saying we should get rid of all these government programs and departments. We should slash bureaucracy and cut back government and get rid of trade barriers and all these things. Now, normally you would think that's economic suicide, especially in a country where, as you intimated, you know, voters for decades and decades have been told by politicians of all parties, no, it's government's job to take care of you. It's government's job to manage the economy. You know, Milei came in and said, no, we're doing something completely different. And so for multiple reasons, people voted for him. Can he actually get the changes through? That's going to be the fascinating question. If he doesn't, Argentina will be a great success story because it will show that you can climb out of the depths of statism, that you can rejuvenate an economy that's been destroyed by big government. But if the Peronists who control the legislature, if they block him and Argentina at best sort of stumbles along for a few years, it could very well be, unfortunately, that people will say, oh, well, we elected a libertarian. He didn't solve the problem. So therefore, you know, we can reject libertarianism. That's my worst case scenario.
The Shilling Show Unleashed podcast continues in a moment with our guest, Daniel J. Mitchell.
Get your fix online at shillingshow.com.
Shillingshowmedia.com is your one-stop shop for websites, audio and video production, and photography.
Shillingshowmedia.com will take your project from conception to completion.
Shillingshowmedia.com is reasonably priced and highly professional.
Need a website for your business? Visit Shillingshowmedia.com.
Need a video created or edited? Visit Shillingshowmedia.com.
Have a photography or graphic design project? Visit Shillingshowmedia.com.
Shillingshowmedia.com is your one-stop shop for websites, audio and video production, and photography.
Visit Shillingshowmedia.com. That's Shillingshowmedia.com.
Looking out for us. Rob Schaub.
We continue now with Dan Mitchell, the Shilling Show Unleashed podcast, and we're talking about Argentina, perhaps lessons for America. So I'd like to go to some of the points of his economic program, and let's start with bureaucracy. I heard when he went into office, and I don't remember the number, but it was a slashing of bureaucracy unlike we've ever seen here in the United States. So what's the reality there?
Here's the reality. Milei, like all presidents in the U.S. And presumably other countries, there are certain executive powers that a president has. We see that in the U.S. with debates about, you know, okay, you know, what should Joe Biden use his executive authority to undo Trump's protectionism? Unfortunately, he hasn't done that. Now there's a big debate in Washington. Should Joe Biden use his executive authority to reinstate the Remain in Mexico policy on immigration? Well, the same thing happens in Argentina. The president has certain authority, and he used that authority very early on taking office, where he was able to get rid of some bureaucrats, where he was able to sort of streamline the flowchart of the Argentinian government. So the number of bureaus and agencies was reduced. That's the good news. The bad news is all he was really doing, at least to some degree, was rearranging the flowchart. Merging three bureaucracies into just one means that you have fewer bureaucracies on paper, but you still have government that's just as big with just as many bureaucrats exercising just as many powers, but they're doing it with one office instead of three offices. So what he's doing is great. And he was even able in January to give Argentina its first monthly balanced budget since, I think, 2012. But his executive powers are not that broad. And so he really will need to somehow convince the legislature to do some bold moves if there's any chance of saving Argentina's economy. That's going to be a challenge, an enormous challenge.
Let's talk about spending. And I don't have really a good sense of how much money they're spending, if they're running deficits. So it sounds like you intimated that they were. To what extent is he able to help control spending?
Milei, as president, I'm sure has some power over the legislature in terms of vetoing bills. I don't know how the veto authority works in Argentina, but I assume it must be there. I've been told by some Argentinian economists that I've talked to that he has what's called impoundment authority, which means just because the legislature appropriates money, that doesn't mean that he actually has to spend it. We've also seen the legislature already reject some of his fiscal proposals. As an outsider who isn't familiar with exactly how the Argentinian fiscal system works with the president, the legislature, executive powers, and so on and so forth, I can't give you a satisfactory answer because I've been trying to learn those things myself. For every four experts I talk to in Argentina, I'll sometimes get three different opinions. And so trying to sift through all that data that I'm receiving has been a challenge. But suffice to say, one thing that everyone I've talked to agrees upon, at the end of the day, Milei cannot unilaterally solve Argentina's problems. He has to somehow convince the legislature, look, we've hit rock bottom. Even if you believe in big government, you at least should try to have big government that makes sense. And so we need to do, you know, reforms A, B, and C and X, Y, and Z. And maybe he can get the Argentinian people to protest in favor of that. Of course, the bad news is we're already seeing that the government unions and the special interest groups are mounting their own protests. So it's going to be a fascinating political story to watch. But of course, as an economist, what I desperately hope for are the policies that will unleash Argentina's economy and enable it to overcome decades of really bad status policy.
Dan, you've spent a lot of your life on tax policy, and I'd love to look at what are the options for taxation and tax reform in Argentina that would really propel the economy.
I'm actually part of a group that has sent a proposal to the Argentinian government on tax policy. A lot of it is basically just cleaning up the mess, you know, the something like 70 plus different types of taxes. High tax rates, things like that. It wasn't a bold proposal because a bold proposal would have to be married to a package that restrained the growth of government. And given that Argentina has these massive problems with government debt, Argentina's gotten all these bailouts from the IMF, which of course have been bad news because every time the IMF gives a bailout, it tells the politicians in Argentina, oh, we can spend some more because ultimately at the end of the day, the IMF's going to come in and bail out our creditors and things like that. Well, Milei inherited that terrible situation. Lots of government debt, lots of deficit spending. And so his ability to cut the tax burden, well, it's going to be very much hindered by the fact it's sort of like the current fiscal situation in the United States. Because of decades of bad fiscal policy and then just the incredible irresponsible spending increases by Trump and Biden, we now have massive deficits. Well, I don't really care about deficits. I care about the size of government. And of course, I always love good tax policy, lower tax rates, tax reform. But even for someone like me, who doesn't lose a lot of sleep about deficits per se, even I realize, boy, this is not an environment where we probably have a lot of leeway to do good tax policy. We have to get government spending under control in the United States. And Argentina needs to do the same thing for the same reason. You can't have good tax policy if you have a bloated public sector, if your government is growing faster than the private sector. Fiscal policy is basically about trend lines. If your government is growing 5% a year and your private economy is growing 3% a year, that's a recipe for endless trouble, for economic stagnation, for higher taxes, for more red ink. But if you can sort of flip those lines so the private economy is growing 5% and government's only growing 3%, then over time, you build up all sorts of good leeway to lower taxes, to give people more economic liberty. That's what Milei is trying to do. Milei is trying to tamp down on spending. Now, Argentina is in such a mess that they don't need to simply restrain the growth of spending. They need to actually cut spending, have government spend less next year than it's spending this year, and so on and so forth. However fast they can do it, spending restraint really is key in terms of restoring Argentina's fiscal policy. And also, because this is really critical, Argentina finances its borrowing in two ways. It gets the bailouts from the IMF, which, of course, are recklessly irresponsible on the part of the IMF, but it also finances its wasteful spending by printing money. Why does Argentina have a problem with high inflation? Because they print money to finance their wasteful spending. So you do good fiscal policy, yes, your fiscal policy improves, but by definition, you're also going to improve your monetary policy as well.
Would there be an opportunity here to really reevaluate their whole approach to currency and switch to a sound money or a gold or silver-backed currency in Argentina? Would that make a big difference?
Well, one of Milei's platform proposals when he was running for president was to dollarize the Argentinian economy. Now, I suspect that the two of us probably complain and don't really like monetary policy in the United States. And we definitely do have problems. I think the Federal Reserve was grossly irresponsible. It increased its balance sheet by $4 trillion starting in 2020. And of course, that ultimately led to the inflation problem that we had last year and is still lingering a little bit into this year. But as bad as our monetary policy has been, we actually look like a bunch of Milton Friedman disciples compared to what it's been in Argentina. And it's sort of like if I'm being stupid and I'm smoking two cigarettes a day, well, that's not good. But guess what? The guy down the street who's smoking three packs of cigarettes a day, he's doing something a lot worse than I'm doing. So that's the way to sort of compare U.S. and Argentinian monetary policy. So Milei said, look, let's simply adopt the dollar, which, by the way, is not a radical idea. Panama has always used the U.S. dollar. El Salvador dollarized, Ecuador dollarized. It's basically a way of saying if you're in a developing country with bad institutions like we see a lot in Latin America, it's a way of saying, you know what? We can't trust our politicians to have their own currency because they'll misuse it. Print money to finance wasteful spending. So let's just use the currency of the United States, because even if it's not a perfect currency, it's a globally accepted currency, and it's going to be much, much better than any sort of monetary policy that our own politicians would adopt. So there is now this debate, should Milei dollarize as quickly as possible? And once again, there's a debate that I don't fully understand. Can he do it unilaterally? Would he have to get approval of the legislature? But one thing we know for sure is that he's putting fiscal policy, fixing fiscal policy first on his agenda. Dollarization is still on his agenda, but I guess that's supposed to come after he fixes fiscal policy. Some people I know say, no, you should have done dollarization first, because that forces, it would sort of handcuff the politicians in the legislature so they would have no choice but to do good fiscal policy. And again, not knowing the political sociology of Argentina, all I know is that I want both things to be done. I don't know enough to be able to say with certainty, oh, you should fix fiscal policy first, or you should fix monetary policy first. I just know they both need to be fixed.
So what's the impact on the United States of countries like Argentina and others dollarizing?
Well, frankly, from the U.S. perspective, it doesn't matter much. I mean, Panama, El Salvador, Ecuador, those are small economies. So if they dollarize, so what? Does anyone even notice? Argentina is a bigger economy, bigger population and all that. But again, the Federal Reserve would never for one second consider that other countries have dollarized when they're doing monetary policy. I mean, we are the dog and these other countries who dollarize are the tail, and the tail does not wag the dog. The dog wags the tail. Is it good for the U.S. in some sort of geopolitical sense when countries dollarize? I guess so. Probably it helps it preserve the dollar as the world's reserve currency, which is a good thing for the U.S. economy, especially when you have countries like Russia and China that want to dethrone the U.S. dollar. But I don't think countries dollarizing, frankly, have a big impact on that sort of big geopolitical issue.
Finally, Dan, what is the possibility of a renaissance in that part of the world? People would look at Argentina and neighboring countries and say, we're sick of this socialism. We want to do what Argentina is doing. Is there any rumbling of that?
That's a fascinating issue because let's go back before Milei. In my travels and speeches and interaction with people in Latin America, I've always been tempted to ask them, you have these horrible failures like Venezuela and Argentina, that should be like a lesson that you could learn. And likewise, you have Chile as a shining example of a country that has gone from poverty to being the richest country in Latin America because they adopted free market policies. So I've always wondered, you know, don't people in Latin America and other countries, don't they look at that and say, we should copy Chile, we shouldn't copy Argentina or Venezuela? But for some reason, that doesn't seem to be the case. Now, having said that, let's just look next door to Argentina on the other side of the Andes Mountains. Let's look at Chile. Chile did have these free market reforms. They did happen under a dictatorship, which sullies them in many people's minds. I mean, I've never understood why you could be against a dictatorship but be in favor of good economic policy. Yeah. It's not like the two have to be mixed together. But of course, the opponents of good policy say, oh, well, we can't count those good policies because they were imposed under a dictatorship. But for decades now, Chile's been a democracy. And unfortunately, back in, I guess it was 2019, they elected a crazy leftist, Gabriel Boric, their president. But the good news is there's now been this sort of counter reaction against Boric. The left tried to change the constitution to make it a big government constitution. Instead of a constitution based on rights, it would be a constitution based on entitlements. That effort was completely rejected in plebiscites by the Chilean people. And Boric is now basically just a lame duck. He doesn't have power to do some of the bad, crazy things that he wanted to do. So is Chile going back in a free market direction? I hope so, but you know, who knows what will happen in the next election? I mean, is there a Milei in Chile that could sort of lead a renewed commitment to free markets that help make Chile a rich country? Is there going to be some sort of revolution in Venezuela? I would have predicted that. I mean, how can the people suffer for so long with such incredible poverty because of socialism and big government? You know, why are they not revolting? Well, maybe the reason they're not revolting is more than 5 million of them, I believe, have emigrated. They've left the country. So it's sort of like, you know, a safety valve where the dictators in Venezuela are saying, okay, you're not happy, you know, just go to the U.S., go to Colombia, go to Panama. There are lots of Venezuelan refugees all over the Western Hemisphere now, and maybe that's helping to prop up that awful socialist system. Very fascinating to look at what's happening in Latin America. I would like to think that Milei could lead to a renaissance of good policy in Latin America, but I'm not holding my breath. I'll be happy if he simply fixes Argentina.
Dan Mitchell, you've got lots of good information online. If people would like to get access to that, what's the best way?
Two things they should do. My organization, Center for Freedom and Prosperity, the website is freedomandprosperity.org. And I write my daily column. The site is called International Liberty. The website, daniel.jmitchell.wordpress.com. blog.com. But I think if anybody just went to a search engine and typed in Dan Mitchell blog, I think it's usually the first thing that pops up.
It'll be right there. Dan Mitchell, thanks for a very instructive lesson on what's happening in Argentina and the implications for America. And thanks for joining us today on the Shilling Show Unleashed podcast.
Hey, it was great talking to you.
That concludes another edition of the Shilling Show Unleashed podcast. Visit us online at shillingshow.com, where you can directly support this podcast by clicking on the Patreon banner at the top of the page and making a monthly donation. Your support is essential for the continuation of the Shilling Show Unleashed podcast. Until next time.